I'm David Delegator. We've all heard that old dictum, you are what you eat. It's another way of saying there are consequences to actions, that there is such a thing as karma. My friend Chris once told me that he became a vegetarian because he didn't want to be eating all that dead animal fear. Today, many food scientists and geneticists hold to the notion that the less things we eat that had parents, the healthier we're likely to be. Who knows? As Darwin put it, biology is destiny, and it's tough to countermand genetics. One thing I do know is that, to some extent, we're all foodies. We grew up watching someone in the family cook that incomparable fried chicken or lemon tart, goulash or jambalaya. And of course, you and I know there's only one true way to make chili, concoct a sazerac or shuck an oyster. Technique and flavor come together on our palates in ways that are idiosyncratically pleasing, so we want to repeat the experience of pleasure that eating gives us. Whether we learned how to do this at our grandmother's side, at a cooking school, or by voraciously following recipes from one of the thousands of cooking blogs that inhabit cyberspace, we all care about our food. And now that many of us eat half our meals out, prepared by some level of professional cook, we also know all the best places to eat. People passionately disagree on whose sushi uses the freshest fish, on which Indian place has the best samosas, on which bartender actually knows how to make a caipirinha, and on which smokehouse guy really understands the essence of barbecue. Consciously or not, we are all critics, and it's only human to be a foodie. Some people read about food as others read blogs gossiping about Hollywood stars, musicians, or sports heroes. Before computers, you had to work a little to find out anything about food. Recipes and techniques for cooking were obscured in books that you actually had to go to the library for. Today, I can get on my computer and find 20 recipes for beef Wellington or Malaysian laksa in about 10 seconds. There's some astounding recipe sites that open opportunities to duplicate dishes from anywhere on the planet. Food, like music, is one of the healing forces of the universe. It is something that unites us as humans. And there is a branch of anthropology that studies such things. The relationship of food to culture falls generally under the term ethnogastronomy. And I recently stumbled, serendipitously, upon a site that leads you to links and discussions on various food topics that affect us all as citizens of the planet. Though it's a mite academic, there's nothing pedantic about the site. It's not a place to go for recipes. There are hundreds of those if you want to find out how to caramelize Brussels sprouts or make another red velvet cake. This site is called foodanthro.com, and it can take you, the foodie, to places you never imagined or considered. Here's some of the things I've read in the last month. First, in old American movies, people used to drink coffee with everything. Not so anymore. In the rise and fall of coffee, I learned why it has been displaced. I was introduced to a remarkable site called Chefs with Issues, devoted to the mental health issues of folks who work in professional kitchens. How many of us don't know someone who works in a restaurant? There was an article about Slowfish 2016, an international conference in New Orleans, bringing together scholars, chefs, fishers, activists, and others, discussing the challenges of the seafood world today, sustainability, economics, and environmental degradation. And there was an article from Bloomberg Business entitled, "The Parmesan Cheese You Sprinkle on Your Penne Could Be Wood." Enough said. And a great story from the Southern Foodways Alliance entitled, "Electric Jello, Refrigeration Brought the Jiggle to Rural Appalachia." And for politicos, there were lists of food policy and farming questions we'd like answered by presidential candidates from Food Tank and Mother Jones. And an article from Mars, yielding to consumer demands and dropping artificial colorings from its global products, which made me wonder about Neptune and Venus. Of course, and I read an article from the Natural Resources Defense Council on the disappearance in the United States of the female farmer. And with the recent passing of Mardi Gras, a piece on the origins, history, and cultural meaning of the king cake, and pity those of us that put up with the soggy, gummy, over-iced excuses for king cake in our town. There was a piece on a great American condiment, the Mambo sauce of the District of Columbia, and a dire warning for winter. Do not eat that first light snow. It soaks up multiple pollutants from the air. As if we didn't already heed Frank Zappa's warning. Plus, a brief history of hangover cures, republished from National Geographic's The Plate, entitled Fried Canaries and Pickled Plums. And another piece from Southern Foodways Alliance for all locals headed to the Outer Banks, Tasting Laos in the North Carolina Mountains. And the same blog publishes a semi-annual collection entitled Cornbread Nation, the best writing about Southern food. And given who we are in this city, of interest might be a piece by Rachel Martin for the Bitter Southerner on how Nashville chicken, hot chicken that is, really happened, especially now that it's been appropriated by Colonel Sanders. Or an essay by Jack Hitt for the popular food site Silver that wonders, whatever happened to turtle soup? Or a vivid confessional by Gwendolyn Knapp for The Eater, entitled What I Learned by Working at Tales of the Cocktail, a yearly international confab in New Orleans about the history and art of creating the cocktail. You get the idea. Entering Food Anthro is like opening a wiki page. One thing cascades into another. Like a good spy novel, you just can't put it down. It's the best of food porn. For Around Cincinnati, I'm David Delegater.